Hey, we are joined at Blogging the Boys this Thursday by the football scientist, Casey Joyner of ESPN.com, and also where you've expanded your empire now. You're the author of the scientific football book series. You brought out Blindsided over the summer, and now you're writing for the New York Times, I understand.
Yeah, the New York Times sit-down blog. You could also add WEEI.com for weekly New England Patriots matchup charts, and then I've also been writing a couple articles for USA Today.
Great. Now, that's a weekly thing for USA Today?
USA Today is it's a catch-as-catch-can, so I've had my first one in there last week. The next one will go on, I think it's November 26th, in an article there. And it's probably, you know, every couple of weeks, it's just run a story past them and see which ones they bite on. So, but it's good. It's real good exposure. So.
All right, well, let's get right down to the statistics. Let's talk about secondary metrics. That's one of your specialties. And coming into the season, you know, you were kind enough to lend me some of your data over the summer, and I did four-year metrics, kind of looking at performance over a four-year period. And Dallas looked really, really good coming into the year because they had Terrence Newman, who was one of, I think, rated third overall over 4 years, and they had Anthony Henry, who was probably top 20, and then they had Adam Jones, who in his tiny little year-and-a-half sample size with Tennessee was banging in the top five, and now not so good, right?
Yeah, not so good this year. It's a combination of factors that makes it not so good. I mean, Jones has 5.9 yards per attempt allowed this year. You know, as we've talked before, anything less than 7 is really good, less than 6 is great. So when he's out there, he's good, but, you know, he's got those off-field issues. You know, look at Anthony Henry, and he's at 8.5 yards per attempt. That's not what Anthony Henry was last year. I think he was in the low 7s last year. And it's, you know, so then when you're at 8.5, you're going to be targeted. People are going to throw you away. So
I think
he hasn't done that well. And Terrence Newman's at 9.9 yards per attempt, but that's an injury. So, you know, one suspension, one injury, and a guy falls off a little bit off of his earlier pace and suddenly go from having a strength to having something of a weakness.
Now, do you have a big enough body of work for Mike Jenkins to calculate a YPA for him?
You know, I'm missing one game from the Cowboys that I've yet to break down, but all the other games, I have 18 attempts for him. He's only forced 6 incompletions, which isn't very good, but he's only given up 6.4 yards per attempt. It's a lot of short passes that are going his way. He's successful enough in that he doesn't give up any big plays off the short passes, but I'd like to see that success percentage come up a little bit more, but it is only 18 attempts, so it might not be quite a large enough sample size to say that he's a liability there.
So now you've said in the past that rookies, that a lot of times with successful rookies, they'll struggle for half a season, and then the light will go on. Jenkins has had to play probably a lot more than they wanted him to, but is his performance consistent with that rookie learning curve?
Yeah, I'd say the tough part for Jenkins is that he hasn't been, you know, like you look at Darrell Revis last year. Last year he had kind of a rough start early on, but he played the whole season, so he got better by the end of the year, and now this year he's one of the best corners in the league. With Jenkins, it's, you know, he wasn't out there, that he's out there, and, you know, the question marks of, okay, will he be out there another few weeks when, you know, even when Pac-Man comes back? You know, it's just that combination of, I don't think that, I'm just taking a guess here from off my scouting app, but I don't think mentally he's gone through the rookie fire in the sense that he's been out there all the time. It's been a kind of a touch and go, and so he's just catching this catch can. I'd like to see him out there for, you know, 10 games in a row and then see how he does before I can really check off and say, yeah, this is what I think about the guy, because right now it's just he's in one situation and moves to another.
Okay, let's turn to the offensive side of the ball. Terrell Owens for the first 3 weeks of the season was just unstoppable. That's a tiny sample size, but he had a big game against Philadelphia. Teams that tried to press him or play a man just didn't work. And then Green Bay started bracketing him, and it seems like everybody's tried it since then. His performance has dropped off. A lot of it's because he's just not seeing very much open space. Let's talk about him in combination with Roy Williams. First off, how was Roy Williams doing with Detroit? And secondly, I mean, he's a veteran. He's not like we only have 0-4 games to go off of. But how much could he help Terrell Owens going forward?
Let's put it this way. In his best seasons, Roy Williams is a is a 9 to 10 yard per attempt wide receiver. And again, putting a perspective here, 6 yards is bad, 8 yards is average, 10 yards is really good, like top of the league good. So he's one of the guys that would be top of the league. My concern with Williams is a bit of the non-metric angle that Williams, when he was the problem he had in 2007. I wrote about this in Scientific Football 2008, where he was getting a ball all the time, and then they brought in, you know, they had Calvin Johnson, and then there finally came a game where they threw the ball a lot to Johnson. The first game of the year, they throw a lot of the ball a lot to Johnson instead of throwing it to Williams. Williams throws an absolute fit, pretty much. He goes into the coach's office and says, you know what, you guys aren't using me enough in this, that, and the other, even though he'd been used a ton all year, and even in the game where he said he wasn't used enough, he's thrown it like 7 times, which is a, you know, that's if you do 7 times per game, if you're thrown to that often, you're going to be in like the top 20 receivers attempt-wise. So it's not like he wasn't used at all. That's the long and short of it is are we going to see the Roy Williams who insists on being the number one? He knows he's not going to be the number one over Owens, but I hate to pull the soap opera bit, but I have to wonder, Williams has a history of wanting the ball a whole lot, and if he doesn't get it, is he going to go back and say, "Hey, I'm going to, you know, I'm upset and this and that and the other"? And are we going to have more of that? Did the Cowboys take on a talent, but a talent who has some a negative that might hurt them?
Okay, well, that's from your 2008 book, but I also want to remind you of the 2007 book where you were kind of sitting around waiting for him to explode. I mean, Roy Williams was one of the players you singled out as a guy who could. Who has the talent and was showing signs that he could be an elite player if something broke right, if he dedicated himself, if the light went on, pick your metaphor. But is there any reason to believe he can't take that step?
Well, he can't take that step. Remember, his best season came when he was playing from Mike Martz. And the one thing you want to remember about Mike Martz is he's very much, when he gets somebody in his offense that he thinks can play in his offense, he will stay on that person all the time. He will insist that they perform better all the time. He's very tough. Now, I'm going to say he's not tough to work with. He's very tough on his quarterback. So he'll like work them all the time. He's gonna keep insisting that he get better. If he doesn't think he can play, he just gives up and says, "Get out of here. I don't need you." But if he thinks he can play, he's gonna stay on there. He had to stay on Roy Williams all the time, and that's the thing. The year before. And I don't have the metrics right in front of me, but the year before, he had, Roy Williams was around the 7 to 8 yard mark. He gets with Martz, Martz stays on him, and he moves up to the 8 to 9 yard mark. You could see the improvement. And so there was the idea that, hey, this guy could get from, you know, getting from 9 to 10. He could make that final step and say, okay, now I'm a truly elite receiver if Martz can continue working with him and he can stay in that offense. I don't think Wade Phillips is that guy. I don't think that, and that's, you know, Jason Garrett might be that guy, but I don't know. I don't see anybody in Dallas who's going to stay on Roy Williams and keep on him to make him get better. And if you add that to the other issue we just talked about, I don't know that his metrics get that much better, even with, you know, Owens on the other side. And yet Calvin Johnson and his metrics were good but not great. So I think there's going to be, I'm not sold that this is going to be a great upside. Plus, you have to remember how good Patrick Creighton was and how much of an upgrade his world is going to give you over what Patrick Creighton's giving you.
Okay. Well, I think also the thinking with Roy Williams is he's some kind of insurance policy if Terrell Owens rolls an ankle. Because I think Cowboy fans remember how that offense just screeched to a halt when he got hurt in Carolina last year. And the offense was just never the same. The passing game was never the same after that. So, but let's turn now to the guy who throws them the football, Tony Romo. And, you know, I was riffing on your metric system early in the season, I noted in the even when Dallas was winning, in the Cleveland game and the Green Bay game, and the Eagles game as well, that he was still making the jaw dropping mistake about once a game, and his bad decision, bad throw ratio was still high. What did you see from him the first 6-7 games before he got hurt?
Yeah, you know, remember a couple of years ago, to put the bad decision metric measures how often a quarterback does something with the ball, makes an ill-advised, does something ill-advised with the ball that either leads to a turnover or a near turnover. Most of the time it has to do with passes. It can happen on runs, too, if a quarterback doesn't protect the ball when he's running the ball. But the idea is that the best quarterbacks are going to average anywhere from 1 to 2% And that means you have an error between 1 in 100 and 1 in 50 passes. So once every game or two on the once every three games on the upper side, once every game and a half on the lower side. If you're a gunslinging quarterback, though, if you're a quarterback who plays in a vertical passing system, and you're not doing a lot of dinking and dunking, usually your bad decision numbers are, if you're good, you're going to be in the mid twos to low threes. Romo, in his first full season, he had a bad decision percentage of, I believe it was 1.4%. He did fantastic. He was a gunslinger and he had a low bad decision percentage. So great. He's got an opportunity to be even better. His bad decision metric shot up the year after. I think it was around 4%, and he was taking a lot more chances than he needed to. And the key for me was he needs to get that back down to around 3%. He's still making the mistakes this year, but the latest metric on him right now is that he's at 2.9% this year. So he's right around the mark which is what I consider acceptable for a gunslinging quarterback. He's still making, he's not at the 1.4% he was that first year. We'd like to see him get back down to that, but he's still not at a point where he's making so many mistakes that it starts to hinder the offense more than the upside of having the vertical passes gives you.
Now, let's talk about his overall game, because you break him down, types of throws, distance of throws, short throws, intermediate routes, deep routes. Did you see any change or any evolution in Tony Romo's game before he broke the finger?
He's always been one of the better vertical quarterbacks in the league. I mean, even part of that has to do with his receiving core and such, but he's a gunslinger in the good sense in that he is always looking to go downfield. He always wants to go vertical. There are some quarterbacks who don't have that or, like to go vertical but are hesitant about it. He'll go and do that. His metrics his vertical metrics have always been top 10. I haven't run the full numbers in all the quarterbacks this year. Last check on Romo's metrics, he would still at a pace that would put him in the top 10 in vertical metrics. So no concern as far as how his vertical game is going. Of course, it's going to be remains to be seen how he's going to do with this, with his finger mended now. If he's back to full strength or he's not. But from what we saw before he got hurt, no, there's no reason to think his vertical prowess has dropped off any.
Okay, now you started last year, or in this most recent book, in the 2008 book, printing offensive line metrics. Are you calculating those? Are you keeping those up to date right now, or is that something you do after the season?
I'm doing some of the pass blocking metrics, like sacks and things. I'm keeping some track of those. I am doing run blocking metrics. They will be released in some form next year. Not sure exactly where and how yet, but I'm going to be doing run metrics. But I'm only doing them right now on an ad hoc basis. So a lot of them doing for the, if I've got an article, I need to do it on. Like I just did something recently in the magazine at Jake Long. So the run metrics don't have much on. Passing metrics, I've got a bit more on.
Okay. And Dallas had one of the better, I think one of the best, actually, maybe had five best pass blocking offensive lines last year. We've seen a real drop off with Flozell Adams' injury and Kyle Kozar's injury this year.
Yeah, we are. You're seeing a definite drop. Adams was one of the. Was I believe he only allowed one sack last
right.
year or two sacks. It was real low. I mean, and that has changed. I haven't looked at the left tackle specifically like that position, but I know that number has dropped off for them. It has. I mean, that's the thing. It doesn't take much. It's one of the things I talk about in Blindside that it doesn't take. That you can get away, the thing I'm looking at when I look at the Cowboys offensive line, you can get away with having average players across the board on an offensive line. They're just good players and things. As long as you don't have a big weakness on the offensive line, you'll be okay. One of the things I talk about in Blindsided is that if you have a weakness on the offensive line, if you have one player who cannot play well, it's like having a bad cornerback in your secondary. It's like having a receiver you can't throw the ball to. It's a huge weakness that it's very difficult to cover up. When they lose Flozell Adams, it goes, it's one of the best pass blocking tackles in the league, and then they go to having it drops off to having a mediocre blocking. Yeah, it's a big difference. It's something that the Cowboys have missed.
Okay, and I imagine that's the same with Kyle Kozar too. I mean, the fans used to jump on him a lot because he's a guy who replaced Larry Allen. But as I've been trying to point out for a long time, having a steady player, the difference between being terrible or replacement level, if we use a baseball metaphor, and league average is so much worse than going from a superstar to just a league average player. A league average player will keep you afloat, but if you have a zero at that position, everything collapses. Is that
yeah, Lazar's not an elite player. We're going to remember about the difference that he's got. His blocking percentages, his point of attack blocking percentages are usually in the 80% range. That's good. Not great. That's good.
Right.
Larry Allen in his, you know, best, his prime is going to be in the 90% range. Let's not forget that Larry Allen was, you know, an aging player, and the Cowboys needed to do something at that position at some point. I know that, you know, we'd like to see Allen play forever, but that's not realistic. And, okay, well, if we can't have him, if we can't either afford him, or, you know, we think that he's closer to the end of his rope than he does, then let's let him go and let's put somebody else in there. Kozar is not a bad player. When you compare him to Larry Allen in his prime, yeah, he doesn't equal up. But neither does pretty much everybody else in the league right now. So for Kozar to be in that boat, he's good. He was a good lineman and things. And to lose him, though, when you start to when you lose another guy like him, and that, you know, that adds two injuries to your offensive line. Doesn't take much. It doesn't take many injuries to an offensive line to suddenly go from being a really good pass blocking group to dropping off. And I think, especially when you're playing in the NFC East, and you got a high pressure unit like Philadelphia, you've got the Giants, who have great pass rushers and who of late are starting to do a whole lot better job of forcing mistakes by quarterbacks. I think it's something that it's not just as easy as saying, "Hey, it's only one injury." It's a pretty big deal.
Okay, thank you, Casey Joyner. Again, ESPN.com, Scientific Football Magazine's. Now, let's give you a little bit of a bigger plug here. Now, you've mentioned that you're still doing some fantasy stuff for ESPN, but where can the people go if they want to find your hardcore metrics?
Well, yeah, I'm doing the 3 weekly articles for ESPN on different areas of fantasy football, for like waiver pickups on Tuesday and getting in defenses to play on Thursday and start sets on Saturday. They can also see my stuff, though. I do a blog posting at the New York Times Sit Down blog on their site, mytimes.com. Do that anywhere from 1 to 3 times a week. If you're looking for something tomorrow on who I think are the best cornerbacks, who I think would be the best all-pro ticket cornerback, you can also go to WEI.com. I do a weekly Patriots preview of their upcoming game, real detailed metrics about how specifically, you know, well their linemen are blocking or the other team's linemen aren't blocking. Some very detailed metrics, granular stuff to say this particular matchup versus this particular matchup. These are how these teams square off against each other.
All right, again, KC, thank you. You've been a longtime friend of the blog, and I appreciate having you on.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.